Hey, welcome everyone to another episode of the Going VC podcast. I'm JJ, and we're super excited to bring you this episode today. As a quick reminder, our goal with this podcast, as always, is to discuss a variety of topics as it relates to launching or accelerating your venture capital career. Our guest today is Joe Dormani, a founding principal at Thomson Reuters Ventures. In today's episode, we talked about Joe's career background, what a corporate venture investor is, and his experience helping found one, as well as some of the differences between a CVC and a traditional venture firm for founders. One last thing before we get started, a quick heads up, this episode was recorded in late 2022 and has been lightly edited to remove a couple references to then current events. And with that out of the way, let's get started. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast today, Joe. We normally start these off with career origin story, a sort of quick backgrounder to bring the listeners up to how you got to where you are today.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to have the conversation. I've been pretty fortunate in my career. I've been able to get a variety of different types of experiences. I really started in the startup world, actually. So I worked for a data tech startup early on in my career. That company ended up getting acquired. And it was the first time that I had been exposed to this idea that, oh, companies get invested in and acquired and bought and sold like all the time. And, you know, I kind of fell in love with this world of venture capital and investing in early stage companies and company building, and knew that that's what I kind of wanted to do with my career. But then I kind of set out on a path of trying to do that and found out, well, actually, this is a pretty hard thing to get into, which was evidenced by the fact that despite how hard I tried, I was summarily rejected over and over again by the various funds or places that I tried to work at. So, you know, I kind of went about the process of building in myself all the things that I had researched as the things that you needed to have in your career tool belt to sort of get to a point where a career in venture was viable, right? So, you know, I did the business school thing, did some financial consulting, and then wound up joining Thomson Reuters in one of these post-MBA rotational programs, which was perfect for me because I got to work in corporate development. I got to work in finance, in strategy, in go-to-market. And so I got this whirlwind of different experiences and ultimately spent some time on the product side of the world and worked my way into the corporate strategy team, where eventually I got to a point where I was responsible for a lot of the M&A we were doing in the legal tech business. So I got a lot of experience there, and all the while kind of in the background doing some angel investments and working with local accelerators in New York and being scrappy and getting on some advisory boards for early stage companies. So kind of building my credibility in the early stage tech space. And then eventually we got to a point at Thomson Reuters where we decided that we wanted to launch a venture fund. And it was just kind of this thing where, you know, we'd been talking about doing this internally, and I, you know, basically, like, you guys can't tell me no. You know, I've been trying to do this for a very long time. And thankfully, they agreed that we should spin up the fund and that I should come and be a leader on the team.
Thanks for giving that background, Joe. And really quickly, could you just give an overview of what Thomson Reuters is and what you all do as a company for anybody who's not familiar?
Thomson Reuters, I think it's a probably well-known name, but not as well-known of all the variety of things that we do as a company. So most people probably know the Reuters news brand, obviously super high integrity news organization, and very kind of proud to be associated with that brand and the work that is done over at Reuters. But we also have what we sort of talk to financial markets and call the kind of big three businesses that constitute the rest of Thomson Reuters, which is a legal technology business focused on legal professionals. So, you know, lawyers in law firms. And so we have software and online information platforms, fairly well-known brands in that market. We have a tax software business, which is focused on tax professionals, like in accounting and auditing firms. We have a corporate segment, which we sell both tax software, legal software, and a variety of different solutions to large corporations. That's a little bit about what we do. And TR is kind of one of those companies that I think we're pretty lucky in the way that our executive team has been managing this business for both growth and profitability and free cash flow generation. So when the company is sort of in the market right now and today, you know, kind of well positioned to kind of weather the economic uncertainty that we're seeing.
Thanks for giving us that breakdown. So you mentioned that you had always been interested in venture and you worked in a couple different departments at TR and landed in corporate strategy, and that you had been wanting to create a CVC at TR for a while. So what kind of led you to want to create a corporate venture arm out of Thomson Reuters?
So TR independently, you know, the kind of executive team at TR ultimately are the ones who wanted to create the CVC. I think the thinking behind that was having a corporate venture arm is a really good way to bring insights into a large corporation about what's happening in the market with new technology, new business models, and new companies that are being built. And, you know, I think they felt we were pretty well positioned, especially with our reputation and credibility in the markets that we serve, to make investments in those markets, which I sort of think are some of the best ways to gain those types of strategic insights about things happening with younger companies. You know, the other angle for us is we do make, you know, a fair amount of acquisitions, which we talk about, and thinking about the venture arm as a way to sort of get access to more deal flow, both on the direct investment side and on the M&A side, is certainly a driver for some of the reasons why we spun up the fund as well.
Thanks for that. And now would love to actually take a step back here. And I know our listeners are, I'm sure, pretty familiar with a normal financial return-driven venture fund, but would love to take a step back here and just sort of go over, what is a corporate venture firm? How does it differ from a traditional financial focus one? Is Thomson Reuters, are they doing this for strategic reasons? Like you mentioned, access to M&A deal flow, that sort of thing. Or I know some CVCs have a single LP, but are sort of financially focused. Would love it if you just get the listeners up to speed on sort of what a CVC is and where TR Ventures fits in that ecosystem.
I think this comes up a lot when talking about CVCs. And the way we think about it, and maybe sort of the way we've structured the fund, is Thomson Reuters Ventures is a financially focused fund with the added benefit of the strategic alignment to Thomson Reuters. And what that ultimately means is that we are investing in and around the markets that we operate in, and in technologies that are highly relevant to the future of those markets, right? So legal tech, tax software, fraud risk and compliance, news and media, all areas from a market vertical standpoint that we serve through the corporation. And then the technologies like machine learning, natural language processing, task process automation, all areas that we focus on that we think are super important to those markets and will be super important for our customers over the next 5, 10, 15 years and longer. And so when we thought about how we wanted to kind of position the fund, you know, that financial return is super important for us as we make investments, and it's a key driver. And I think the reason why that is important, I think making financially successful investments is one of the best ways to meet the strategic needs that are generally present as part of a corporate venture fund as well, right? So bringing those strategic insights about what is happening with the best early stage companies in the market, finding, identifying, and getting to know and partnering with some of the best early stage companies to help us figure out our own strategy or kind of add into and build on what we sort of think about and prioritize from a strategic standpoint. So I really do think it is a fairly balanced approach. And, you know, when I say we have the added benefit of the strategic alignment, a big part of what we do when we make investments is we build a strategic thesis around those investments for how we work with companies we invest in to accelerate them, right? That gives us an edge as a fund. And when we talk to founders, like, we hear more and more that founders are looking for strategic investors, for folks who are going to not only just make investments, but help them manage the business, help them with partnerships or product integrations, or just things as simple as becoming a customer where it makes sense. And so, you know, we're really well positioned to do all those things. And it's a big part of what we do when we make investments, roll our sleeves up, we get really involved in the companies that we invest in.
That makes a lot of sense. Next, kind of a pair of questions. Do you think of TR Ventures as a traditional financially focused fund with the sort of added strategic aspect of its corporate parent? Would love to get your thoughts on how should founders think about working with a CVC? I know it's probably less common they meet with them and the structure can be kind of all over the map. So obviously specific to TR Ventures, but you know, in general, how do you think founders should think about working with a CVC and what are some of the questions they should ask themselves and whether that's the right fit for them?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think thinking through very specifically what the value is in working with a corporation can bring and making sure that not only there's like a level of commitment to whatever that is, but making sure that the folks on the CVC side, the investors themselves, are working directly with the kind of experts in the business as you kind of build through that sort of strategic process, right? So, you know, having a very specific idea about what you might want to try to accomplish together with the strategic investor and making sure that the investor, the team is making the connections to the experts in the business who will then ultimately have to go and execute on whatever that strategic vision is, right? Like, you know, it's just kind of speaking a little bit about how we do that. It's something I make sure we do when building our strategic theses. If it's going to be a partnership or a product integration, right? On the partnership side, we'll make sure we make an introduction to the go-to-market team. We'll make sure that, you know, as part of our investment memo and part of, you know, our kind of pitch to the company, we'll have a plan laid out for why we think we're a well-placed investor to explore partnership. If it's more on the product side, right, we'll introduce the product and technology teams. We'll talk about what a joint proposition could look like. We'll talk about, you know, the potential benefits of going and doing that. So you're kind of doing two things there. You're fleshing out the strategic vision for how you can work together, but you're also getting the buy-in from the stakeholders on the business side and the important key people on the startup side who are ultimately going to have to work together to drive forward and execute on whatever that strategic vision is. You know, it's the kind of thing that doesn't necessarily have to happen day one after making an investment, but as long as you have a plan and a process for how you'll take something forward, you know, to make that strategic vision a reality, they think you're kind of optimizing for the best potential outcome.
That makes a lot of sense. And then now, you know, moving on to the sort of second part of this question, I think investors sometimes have concerns when they're evaluating a potential opportunity and there's a CVC on board, one of them being that a CVC can potentially limit exit opportunities. And yeah, I guess just, you know, kind of curious if you have any thoughts on how other investors should look at a startup with a CVC involved. And if there's any truth to that there, at least with respect to Thomson Reuters.
No, I mean, from my perspective, I think that's fairly antiquated. I mean, for us, the part of being a financially focused fund is that we're trying to optimize for the best outcome for our founders. The most that we'll ask for when we make investments is like, if you get an acquisition offer, just let us know that you've got one. And if it's something where we'd like to try and make a bid, you know, we can go and do that. But we don't ask for right of first refusal or anything like that. We don't put any contingencies on the business or on the investment that are prohibitive for them doing anything that they want to do that's going to be advantageous to them. And our job is to work with the founders and make sure that they are in the best position for success, because ultimately that's what makes them successful, what makes us successful, and frankly, it drives the best outcome for our customers as well. I don't see that concern being brought up when we talk to funds that we co-invest with. We work with some of the top funds, you know, across the United States and Europe. So it just, we're heading into this world where there's more of a recognition of the strategic value that, you know, an investor or a CVC can bring. And I sort of feel like it's interesting because I think CVCs are in general kind of trying to look a little bit more like traditional funds. And actually the traditional funds are starting to try and do things that are a little bit more how CVCs operate with some of the areas that they're trying to bring strategic value to the companies they invest in. So I do feel like there's a little bit of a convergence in the industry.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And to follow on to that a little bit, Joe, so I think you have a really unique perspective because you are the founding principal of TR Ventures. And you mentioned you were kind of a key driver and really launching this corporate arm of TR. Would love to hear a little bit more on what the experience of founding this firm has been like for you. I know you've touched a little bit on the why and the strategy of the fund, but would love to hear a little bit more of your take on like what founding the firm has been like.
First, I'll probably just qualify by saying founding the firm is probably a little bit strong for you know, really building an organization within the corporation. But that being said, we did build it from scratch. So there are a bunch of ways where starting an organization from within a large corporation is challenging. But there's a lot of ways where it actually kind of makes life a fair bit easier, especially with what we're doing on the venture side. So some of what we had to do was create a very clear set of objectives about what we were trying to accomplish with the fund and why we were putting together a fund. You know, we had to have a pretty comprehensive strategy for, you know, how we were going to make investments, what type of investments where we were going to do, what in the market we were going to be looking at, like a thesis around the fund itself. So we had to kind of build that all from scratch. And then, you know, we needed to bring in the right talent to help us run this organization, right? So we brought Tamara Steffens on board pretty early in this process. And Tamara is a technology industry veteran. She's been in 6 startups with 6 exits. And then, you know, she ran business development and then ultimately M12, Microsoft's venture team, for a number of years. So, you know, she was super critical and a key part of building TR Ventures as well. She came over at the beginning of this year to be the MD of the fund. And, you know, the level of kind of expertise and experience that she brings is just amazing. So, you know, having the right folks, we've brought in a couple of really strong investors, Hussein, our analyst, and Riley, our associate, who both come into the New York office and hang out with me throughout the week. So having the right people on the team, super important. Having a really clear vision and strategy for the fund, super important, right? Like, just very clearly on, you know, we have $100 million funds. Okay, what does that mean from a portfolio diversification standpoint? What does that mean from a check size standpoint? Will we have follow-on investments? You know, kind of being very clear and intentional with that. So it really was like building that, you know, an entire firm from scratch, but doing it sort of organizationally within the corporation was super advantageous, because ultimately, you know, we didn't have to then go out and raise the $100 million. We had the solo LP model to push us forward with our strategy. And so it's been a really great journey. Now we've been in the market for almost a year now, made about 5 investments, 3 of which were publicly announced just this week. But obviously the work on those have been happening in the background for the last few months. So it's been a super interesting journey, a ton of learning. And yeah, I mean, just kind of super grateful to kind of have been a part of it.
Definitely really exciting stuff. And we'll stay tuned for those funding announcements. Would be curious to hear, and you could talk on this from more of a like general CVC perspective or more specific to, you know, your story with TR Ventures, but just curious, what does working with the leadership team or the executive team at a corporation look like? Like, what does that relationship look like between the corporate arm and then the executive team from the founding and getting their buy-in all the way through the corporate arm is fully operational and you all are actively making investments?
In a way, the executive team and the stakeholders around the various parts of Thomson Reuters are kind of like the LPs of the fund, right? We, as the kind of managers of the fund, we are accountable to them for executing on the strategy that we told them that we would execute on. So when we were starting the fund, we laid out what that strategy was. When we started to make investments, we sort of explained to them what the investments were and how we make investments. I think a really important part of being able to be successful is having some level of independence with investment decisions, but also a strong tie to our sort of corporate objectives and strategy at the same time. So we have a very small investment committee, but the representation on that is super important. So it's our chief strategy officer, our chief product officer, Pat Wilburn's chief strategy officer, David Wong's chief product officer, Tamara Steffens, the MD of the fund, and then myself. So it allows us to have a really streamlined process for how we make investment decisions. And there are really all the appropriate checks and balances for that decision-making process. And then we do put out quarterly reports for our executive team on, you know, what's happening in the market. We try and bring as much insight into the corporation as we can about what's happening in the market, different types of companies that are kind of getting funding and kind of what the macro landscape is. And then ultimately, we also report on, you know, our own process, our own strategy, our own deal flow, all the way down to the particular investments that we make, and why we made those, what our positions are in those, what our strategic plans and goals are for those investments and the progress that we are making towards executing on those strategic goals. So I think it works pretty well. Obviously, you know, there's always things you want to improve and ways you can move the ball forward, but I'm pretty grateful for the engagement that we get across the corporation with, you know, not only the executive team, but all the leadership across CR are pretty enthusiastic and supportive of what we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I know JJ has some questions he wants to dive into more on the sectors you all invest in, but one more question from me sort of on the founding of a CVC. So I'd imagine there's probably many folks within their company who is really bullish on or interested in creating a corporate venture arm. Having gone through that founding experience, do you have any advice that you would give somebody who's really interested and kind of in the beginning stages of thinking about trying to pitch the executive team on creating a corporate venture arm?
Generally, the way I approach these things, it's not maybe specific to a venture fund, but any sort of strategic initiative or product build or any type of sort of investment decision, I always try and lay out what I think the kind of future state looks like and what we're trying to ultimately optimize and achieve for. And then I work backward from that. And it's almost like laying out the thought progression and then the sort of key milestones for what you want to ultimately achieve and ultimately how you sort of will go about doing that. So if the goal is to have a fund and make direct investments in early stage companies, kind of say, well, here's what that will look like. You know, here's how much capital we'll deploy over what period of time, different size checks we'll write. Will we hold a portion of the fund back for follow-ons? Are we going to double down? Are we going to have a more diversified approach and not do follow-ons? And then kind of just lay out what that fund strategy is, what kind of economics will be, like what the distribution of returns that you'll need to have to make the fund successful. And then ultimately, like, okay, so well, how will you achieve that investment? Okay, well, what is the strategy for the markets that you want to invest in? Or these are the specific markets, specific technologies. Yeah, how are you going to go about achieving that portfolio that will be in a position to optimize for your success? And then like kind of work back from there to, okay, well, why are we doing this in the first place? Like, how are we going to go about getting the right people to do it? What is our sort of objective overall here for the corporation? Why is this relevant for us? Are we trying to kind of build the future for what the company is looking for? You know, is there a particular area in the business that could really use connections to early stage startups and technology? And just being able to kind of lay that out clearly in a way that is digestible at the executive level, that is like sort of sound from a cost benefit standpoint, you know, I think goes a long way for being able to achieve that.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's a really great exercise and framework to follow for anybody who's interested in kind of taking that step. Great. JJ, I will hand it over to you now for some more kind of sector specific questions.
Yeah, sounds good. So I have a couple sectors that I think you and TR has a pretty interesting viewpoint in and would love to dig in. But I guess before we jump over to that, for any potential founders listening on this call, what are TR's sort of focus sector stages, that sort of stuff? And then I've got a couple picked ahead of time that I'd love to dive into.
Yeah, cool. So I was hoping you'd ask that question. It's an important one to talk about. So like I said, it's a $100 million fund and you know, we're Series A focused, so we write $3 to $5 million initial checks, and we are holding about a third of the fund back for follow-ons. So, you know, we're thinking about these investments over the fairly long term, and you know, wanting to be kind of permanent strategic investors here. So that's kind of the size and shape of the investments we've been making. We can size up or size down. You know, we've done a seed, we've done some later stage stuff, but Series A is going to be the focus. We generally don't lead deals, which is important to note. We mostly invest as part of a group. Not to say that we won't ever, but you know, for the most part, probably 80-20, we'll invest as part of a group, and then maybe we'll lead a few deals, but it will be a smaller number relative to the total. And then, yeah, the areas we focus on, I've talked about a little bit, but that's legal, tax, technology, fraud, risk, and compliance. So all areas that we have large, successful franchises in. And then, you know, we also do some stuff in news and media as well. And like I said, technologies that are highly applicable to the future. Those industries are squarely where we put a lot of time thinking.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for that. One of those technologies I think is pretty applicable both to content industries like the Reuters news arm, as well as huge swath of the professional services industry. Would love to dive into AI and ML and get your thoughts on it, Thomson Reuters thoughts, your theory on how this is going to impact the set of future work there. I feel like in the last, even just, you know, if we had a conversation 6 months ago, this would be a totally different conversation. But with stuff from OpenAI like DALL-E 2, the generating miraculous works of art from text there and the stuff like that. So I feel like this is a really exciting topic right now. And I would love to just get your thoughts on how you guys think about this as a fund. And maybe if you have some insight how Thomson Reuters, you know, I think one of the world's premier content providers, is, you know, kind of cliche as it sounds, if you look at Reuters News or the legal databases you guys provide, I feel like you guys are sort of one of the world's premier content creators and might have an interesting viewpoint on AI and ML there as well.
So it's a very multifaceted question. And obviously things related to these technologies are moving super rapidly. You know, I think from a kind of pure content creation standpoint, I see things on the kind of text generation and video and picture generation front, ultimately like driving towards this world where the cost of content production kind of just rapidly decreases. And ultimately, I think that kind of aligns with this trend that we've been seeing towards individual content creators, you know, kind of being able to kind of build big brands around themselves through a variety of different medias, right? So like your Substacks of the world, YouTube, and the sort of podcast world, great example. And I think the way content creators can interact with these technologies will just take the amount of time it takes to create really high quality content. We'll take it from, you know, maybe something that in the past would have taken weeks, months, maybe even longer, down to days, minutes, potentially. So, you know, I think that's one kind of really large impact with a really sort of broad long tail of people that will be affected by this. So, you know, I think you sort of see just kind of more content being created and more and more brands being built around individual creating that content. So I think that's kind of like one angle to the kind of AI and ML discussion. And I think then there's kind of another world where, you know, a lot of the machine learning and AI that's being built is very accretive to professionals and how they do their work. So ultimately, it's like more of an augmentation tool for areas like the, you know, the law or taxes. And underneath that is the importance of data and value that gets added to data, and not moving from this world where maybe some of that was happening in a fairly manual way, where content and data is being enriched by marking it up, tagging it, adding metadata or characteristics to that data, moving to a world where that part is automated and thus, you know, driving up the kind of volume of enriched data, which is ultimately the kind of fuel for these AI and machine learning models and capabilities. And you get to this world where I sometimes think about this as like the way that people kind of use spell check. As like, yeah, you wouldn't write a work email without having spell check on, right? You just, it's just on there and in the background. And, you know, I think there's a parallel there for how lawyers and tax accountants or any professional with, you know, a specialized set of expertise sort of working together with AI and machine learning in the background to kind of augment them and supplement what they're doing, whether that be looking at a corpus of contracts or, you know, analyzing a tax code or doing some sort of financial analysis or whatever that task might be. So that's kind of a broad way of how we're sort of thinking about where opportunities are to build interesting businesses.
That makes a lot of sense. And now another thing we discussed in our planning call was crypto. It sounded like you guys maybe have a strong viewpoint on sort of crypto and enterprise. Would love to dig into that a little bit. I imagine most of our listeners for now, if they're familiar or sort of users of crypto, it's mostly on the consumer side of things. What sort of opportunities does Thomson Reuters see in the crypto space for enterprise?
I think we have an evolving viewpoint on it. And kind of like everyone, I think we're kind of learning as we go. When I sort of think about crypto. I kind of think of things in like the financial bucket, crypto and blockchain networks that will underpin and ultimately upgrade more financial focused use cases. And, you know, the other kind of bucket we think about is like where corporations and enterprises will build and adopt technology that are underpinned by blockchain. So it's like not necessarily thinking about tokens, more so thinking about solutions to problems, you know, the kind of architecture or governance mechanisms that a blockchain or a crypto project can bring to bear, and sort of trying to figure out, you know, what some of the most valuable areas where we could potentially play. Like one of our first investments as a fund was in a company called Legible. And so they build crypto tax software that analyzes information directly on a blockchain to understand the tax liability or tax position for crypto transactions, right? So they have software that interacts directly with chains. They run a variety of different nodes. And so they have direct visibility across chains, centralized custodians for all sort of crypto transactions. So they could tell you the sort of lineage of those transactions and ultimately what the sort of tax consequences of those things are. So that's been an interesting one for us. On the financial side, we sort of just see this world where the financial institutions probably have to move into a world where they're going to have to deal more and more with different types of cryptocurrencies. So, you know, what does that mean for the technology around dealing with that, that they'll have to adopt, right? So custodianship, tax, obviously a big one on that front, infrastructure rails on the currencies. Those are all areas where we see a fair amount of opportunity. And then on the enterprise side, you know, like there's just kind of these categories where they're just sort of unsolved technology problems, right? Like data sharing is a perfect example, I think, of a space that could lend itself to, you know, a variety of encryption-based use case underpinned by some consortium-based or decentralized governance mechanism, right? Where historically corporations and institutions have been very protective over their data, right? Especially, you know, various aspects of personal data, right? Like they don't want to share different aspects of data. And it sort of, you know, has created inequity in the data sets that have been created and ultimately like the level of completeness and quality of enterprise data. So could there be a world where consortium model for data sharing emerges that is underpinned by a decentralized, you know, maybe even a DAO managed data sharing network where you don't have to worry about the attributes of data that you don't want to necessarily share. You share very specific attributes or that you're willing to share, you know, the kind of a variety of different things that you can do that make companies more willing to be able to share their data. That's one area that I think could be ripe for enterprise blockchain crypto adoption, but it's very different, I think, from a lot of the mainstream use cases that I think get talked about a lot, right? With Bitcoin and things like Ethereum, but obviously the technology is sort of super applicable to things like that.
Awesome. Awesome. That makes a lot of sense. So I know we're coming up on time here. So last few questions. What gets you excited in 2023?
You know, there are a lot of interesting things happening in enterprise tech. You know, we meet with tons of founders, tons of funds. You know, I think despite current macroeconomic climate, there's still a lot of enthusiasm for building early stage companies. I think that the pace of deal making has slowed down, but we still see high quality companies being built, getting funded. You know, we announced our investment in DataGrail. It's a data privacy platform. We're super excited about working with them, exploring a potential partnership with that company. Redbird, which is a data workflow automation platform that we think is changing the way large corporations are thinking about their data strategies. We also announced Northstar, which is a financial wellness platform sold to corporations that helps the employees of that corporation make optimal decisions and plan for, you know, how they manage their expense budgeting and, you know, if they have options packages and, you know, their salaries, how they kind of budget and plan. They also have one-on-one financial advisors. So really excited to kind of work with these companies. We also invested in a Priori Legal, which is an enterprise legal services marketplace that connects law firms and legal departments. So really excited for kind of the year to come and working with those companies, building relationships, and really excited about continuing to make investments. One of the spaces that we're putting a fair amount of thought into is AI model governance, right? So looking at AI models, thinking about the characteristics of those models, what drives, if any, you know, are they balanced? You know, are the models surfacing any kind of bias in the decisions? And ultimately, we think probably an area where regulation or at least standards get passed. So, you know, when AI models are deployed, you have to give a level of transparency and auditability around how the model's being deployed, how it's trained, and ultimately kind of what drives the sort of decision-making process. So it's not just this kind of AI black box. So that's a super interesting area that we're thinking about a fair bit, you know, alongside the other market verticals that we focus on. So very much looking forward to kind of continuing to make process, continuing to build out the TR Ventures organization.
Awesome. Awesome. And Rachel, want to take it away, close it out for us?
Yeah. So just a couple more questions for you, Joe. So one kind of fun question that we always like to close out episodes with is if you have a favorite recent book that you've read that you'd like to tell us a little bit about, or it could be a TV show.
Wow. Okay. Well, the Lord of the Rings TV show on Amazon, I think is phenomenal. So we'll throw that out there. Favorite books. I mean, Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz is one of my favorite books, especially on business. It's not super recent, but I think it's a kind of must read. I recently read Ben Bernanke's book on, you know, 21st century monetary policy. I think that was super interesting, especially given kind of all the things happening in macro. And I also read Power Law, which was just good, kind of encapsulates VC history. So if anyone wanted to understand the, you know, where and how VC industry was created, I think you should check that out as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I think Hard Thing About Hard Things is definitely a classic, and we'll be sure to link all three of those books in the show notes for anybody who wants to check those out. And yeah, final question here for you, Joe. So if any folks listening want to keep up with you or TR Ventures, what is the best way to do that, whether that be socials, website, blog, or otherwise?
Definitely LinkedIn for me. Just check me out on there. I like to post somewhat snarky comments. So yeah, that should be a fun time. And then you can check out our website, trventures.com. We really just revamped it. So, you know, we're excited about re-releasing our website. So definitely check that out and feel free to shoot me a message. Yeah, try and be as responsive as possible, but I always love to chat about this stuff.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe. It's been a pleasure hearing about your path into venture and helping found a corporate arm of TR. So thanks so much again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.